Marcus Sahaba Online Radio. Empowering the Ummah.
Yes, at the time of the morning, where we join our very own Professor Andre Duvernaga from the Northwest Universities, and it's weekend headlines. Good morning, Prof, and tell me how you're doing.
Good morning, Shafat. No, I'm fine here in Mossel Bay. Beautiful day, beautiful weather, beautiful environment.
Yes, Prof, you know, we've been following the news and we've been looking at many things that are coming through. And, you know, when you look at weekend headlines, what would you like to highlight, Prof?
Well, Shafat, I think the big story of the day and the weekend and the past few weeks are the battle in the Ukraine and what is going on there and the dynamics. I understand there's a new offensive launch and the Russians are replanning their whole initiative. So that's the one big story. The other big story, to a large extent, is what is happening in South Africa. We have recently seen AfriForum winning a court case against a payment that should have gone the way of Cuba, and it was stopped. I was busy reading that when your phone call was coming through. I think another thing is the big ANC story, the ANC dynamics. Just this morning, I had a call about people that are concerned about violence that are picking up, according to their assessment, in parts of KZN. So these are some of the tendencies I am picking up. I must tell, I am not 100% in front of a television screen, but these are some of the tendencies I am picking up.
No, absolutely, Prof, as you talk about the scenarios in South Africa, and, you know, people are talking about that group going around and checking up on foreigners, and just this morning, there was also breaking news, I think it was yesterday or this morning, where they found a syndicate that was selling, you know, passports for 500 rands, Prof, and it happened to be an overseas individual that was caught for doing this. It's sad, Prof, that, you know, most of the crimes that are being perpetrated at the high level, the kidnapping, fraudulent documentations, and, you know, moving people from one country to another, happen to be foreigners, Prof. How do you, you know, do you blame South Africans for being skeptical of foreigners then, Prof? Well, it seems that we lost a professor. We'll try him and raise him again. Yes, our engineers have been sharp on the job and managed to get Prof back again. Prof, good top engineer here. He's got you back online. And we're talking about these, you know, most of the crimes that are being perpetrated. We talk about the kidnapping kingpin happen to be foreigners. We talk about, you know, the fraudulent documents that are coming from Home Affairs, giving out passports and so forth, happens to be foreigners that are capturing all our, you know, important entities that, you know, ensure good functioning of the government. Even our, you know, police force and judiciary and all been captured by these, you know, these mafias from overseas. Your thoughts, Prof, and I was making the point, do you blame South Africans for being skeptical of these people, you know, the foreigners especially, Prof?
Shafat, by no means. I think we have good reason to be skeptical, although we also need to look at ourselves in the first place. Why did they enter the country? Who allowed them into the country? Why are we giving them the room to operate and do whatever they are busy doing? And that, to me, is the biggest concern. To me, that is an indication that the state is not functioning the way the state should function. And as I mentioned in the past, we have seen tendencies of what I like to call the parallel state, where the state has reached the point where it's falling apart to the extent that we as ordinary citizens are creating alternatives to manage our systems. And now the whole thing about the foreigners is a very interesting dynamic to me. On the one side, it is my assessment that the foreigners are really contributing to the gross domestic product in South Africa. And as I've mentioned to you, working around my own house, I have met people from Zimbabwe, people from Mozambique, working with tiles and working with cement and bricks and all these type of things. And they are doing an excellent job at a very, very low cost-effective price. So they are contributing. But at the same time, we have these criminal elements entering. And you mentioned syndicates. We can also look at farm murders and all of this. But at the end of the day, everything is coming down to the point where we need to ask the question, Safat, where is the state? The state is about order. The state is about patterns, about regularity, about legislation in application, all of these. And this is unfortunately not happening. And at the end of the day, basically everything is falling apart, and that is my argument, and that's also the argument of some of these other strategic analysts arguing that the South African state as state is currently at risk, and we need to make strong adjustments. And fortunately, the positive tendency in all of this, what I am picking up, is that Cyril Ramaphosa in some ways is working in that direction. And that seems to be a positive trend, but there's still a long way to go in this regard.
Prof, maybe many asking you the question, when will Cyril Ramaphosa change his cabinet? It seems as if he's going after, you know, some elements in the public and so forth, and trying to clean up maybe a home affairs and this and that. But when will he clean up his cabinet, Prof?
Well, as a fact, my understanding is that it was already supposed to have taken place a time ago. But now we know that Ramaphosa is a guy for compromises. And what we are looking at is a cabinet full of compromises, of political power centers combined into one. And by taking one away, there is a risk for the president, especially during an election year like this year, where he need to win an election within the framework of the ANC. Therefore, my expectation is not to see a cabinet reshuffle this year, at least not no elections before critical elections that will take place within the framework of the ANC, or maybe very short before that time. But I think the first cabinet reshuffle will be due at the beginning of next year, after the 16th, the 17th, and the 18th of December, when the National Conference of the ANC is supposed to take place. That is working with the scenario that the conference will take place, that there will be order, stability, and security. A number of things went well for President Ramaphosa in recent times. He got the nod from Mpumalanga. My understanding is that he consolidated his support base in places like Gauteng. My understanding is when it comes to the Northwest, his candidate in the name of Nonu Moloi is a relative strong candidate. I'm not sure what are the most recent tendencies when it comes to the Free State, but it seems positive in some ways. So the scenario is a bit better, and I think from there we can expect stronger decision-making. But it's first consolidate the position and then taking the decisions necessary.
Yes, sir, Prof. Also, I'm thinking about the ANC Youth League. Once upon a time, it was very powerful. And you remember it was one Julius Malema, who was the leader at that time of the ANC Youth League, that managed to dethrone Thabo Mbeki with his big mouth and the power that he wielded. But when you look at the Youth League now, it's more like a toothless body. What's your thoughts on that, Prof?
Well, Shafat, there's no doubt. If you look at the history of the Youth League, you will find a very strong institution. And you will pick up the names O.R. Tambo, Nelson Mandela, and many others within the framework of the ANC Youth League. But since the EFF breakaway, the Youth League never was the same again. And at the moment, there's not a lot of political momentum within the framework of the Youth League. It seems as if the highest levels of political apathy is coming, and in some ways resistance also, is coming from that sector, which is normally under the command of the Youth League, and that is the age groups 35 and younger. And the high levels of apathy, political apathy, is experiencing in that category, when you talk ANC and when you talk EFF, you will find strong support within that category going the way of the EFF. But Shafat, clearly the ANC is not an organization it was even 5 years ago. It's an organization that is falling apart. And it's an organization that must face difficult challenges at the moment. And it's very interesting, just check the role Thabo Mbeki is playing at the moment. It seems as he is an ambassador that is going around the country, that is trying to re-establish trust within the framework of the ANC. We know he had conversations in the Free State, he had conversations in the Eastern Cape, KZN, and a few other places. And clearly he's busy reconsolidating the ANC as a party. And many people are working, and I'm reading this among analysts, even people that were pro-ANC for many years, are working with the prediction that the ANC may run into trouble when it comes to the 2024 national and provincial elections. So there are trouble for the ANC. It's an open question if they are going to survive this ordeal. My take, however, on the Democratic Alliance is that they are in their own trouble, or in their own makeup of trouble that they are into at the moment, and a lot of resignations and people not aligning with the party is taking place. So basically we are looking at a general reconfiguration of the political spectrum. And Shafat, many things can change towards 2024, making the South African political environment a high-risk environment for politicians.
Prof, you look at the RET group, the Radical Economic Transformation Group, and, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa is embraced and celebrated by the West because he plays, sometimes he's very compliant to them, and perhaps he's also promised them, don't worry, when I am president of this country, I will obey the top conglomerates and I will do what you really want me to do, but let me bide my time and let me, you know, wheel and deal. What's your thoughts on that, Prof?
Well, Shafat, there's no doubt that Cyril Ramaphosa, in his approach towards world politics, in its approach towards South African politics, is probably as moderate as you can get within the structures of the ANC. From there, the strong resistance we are looking at coming from groupings like the RETs, the Coalition of the Corrupt, etc., etc. So I'm reading Cyril Ramaphosa as a moderate. I'm reading him as very pro-Western in his orientation, democratic. And I think, in a way, he is receiving a lot of support from Western groups, including the whole concept of white monopoly capital that Julius Malema and others are using, are in a way linked to the president. But my problem with him is not his philosophy, his approach, his point of departure. I am in complete agreement with him. And I think he is one of the better people to deal with it. But my problem is taking the strong decisions that is necessary, the decisions we would like to see coming from a political reformer. Mustel, Brazil, if you look at De Gaulle in France, if you look even in some ways to Churchill in Britain, these are people who took strong decisions under extremely difficult circumstances. And my concern about our president is that in some ways he is disappearing, but that he is more closely linked to the Western than to the so-called Eastern Bloc and the radical politics. I have no doubt about it, and that he is doing a very sound balancing trick when it comes to ANC politics. That is also true, but that is also the risks for him as a president. And that is where the RET groups and the Zumas and the Ace Magashules would like to expose him. And frequently we are hearing the perspective that he is either connected to white monopoly capital, or he's connected to the old security guard in the apartheid times. These types of connections that were made in some way. So, yes, he is a moderate. What I hope to see, especially after he may be re-elected within the ANC, is a person taking strong decisions, restoring our constitutional democracy, and taking us forward as a country.
Prof, the million-dollar question also is, why did Nelson Mandela back Cyril Ramaphosa? I mean, even he wanted him above Mbeki. What was the reason?
Well, Shafat, we can only guess about that. I believe that Mr. Ramaphosa, I think he was in some ways at that point a very, very strong figure as a leader of COSATU, a leader of the National Union of Mine Workers. He made a very, very strong impression on the South African politics. And at that point in time, Nelson Mandela was associated with a group we have called the Exiles within the ANCs. Then you had the UDF groupings that were more internal. And I think Nelson Mandela thought at that point in time, it is important to bring the insiders closer to the ANC because they commanded the support at the grassroots level. I think that was at least one consideration. I think another consideration was his moderate approach towards things, because I'm reading Nelson Mandela also as a very moderate person in his political approach, secondly. And then his negotiating skills, because Mandela know that this guy brought about the constitutional dispensation, he negotiated, and he did a fine job as far as South African politics is concerned. And at the same time, there was this conflict between Thabo Mbeki and this other guy that was killed, Chris Hani. There was that big battle going on between these two. And this had the potential to divide the ANC in a fundamental way. I think all of these were the considerations Nelson Mandela had in mind. But at that point in time, Thabo Mbeki had all the strategic connections, and it was a bit of an irony that it was, in fact, the Youth League that was the group that was primarily responsible for positioning Thabo Mbeki. But as we had talked in the past, I think the full story we haven't heard about the Chris Hani murder and what happened there. And I think there's still a lot what should have been told in politics about this. And the key figure is the person that is still in jail, and that is Janusz Waluch. And it will be interesting to hear and see what the Constitutional Court is going to make with his case.
Yes, and Prof, the bottom line is, you know, Nelson Mandela being a cause, and Thabo Mbeki. I mean, that dynamics came in quite strongly during his leadership, because when it came to appointment of blacks, he was more inclined towards his Oza people than the Zulus, and you know, perhaps they made note of that. But why would he go and back Cyril Ramaphosa, who's a Sotho, Prof?
Shafat, yes, you're absolutely right. I remember at the time when Thabo Mbeki was at the helm of things, people talk about the Cosa Nostra as his connection, and he in fact did appoint people from a Cosa origin, but it was not nearly to the extent it happened when Jacob Zuma took control and he appointed Zulu people and struggle people and security people in positions. Currently, I am picking up a similar tendency, and that is that even our current president has his own loyalties on certain levels, but I don't think it is to the extent that it happened, especially during the time of Jacob Zuma. But yes, it is normal to politicians to appoint their loyal people and to get people into position that may support them during times of crisis. So yes, it is happening, and it's still happening, and it's probably one of the features of what we like to call elite politics and the elite dynamic we are seeing in politics, and which is a constant factor in all political dispensations to a certain extent.
You know, Prof, during the last election, the municipal election, I was told that in eThekwini, this is the Durban KwaZulu-Natal region, not one Indian candidate was put up by the ANC. And it seems quite shocking, and perhaps even asking you the question, how many white candidates did the ANC put up during the last municipal elections? Seems like a nana, Prof. What's happening?
Well, Shafat, there's no doubt that minority groups, and now I'm specifically referring to the so-called colored people, but specifically the Indian and the white people, they are without any doubt marginalized from politics. And that is a huge area of concern. At the moment, they are literally on the outside of politics. They are not even being used in positions. You know, when it comes to appointments within the civil service, appointments at university levels, we are getting just the order, no white people will be appointed in any position in future. As easy as that. And to me, that is a huge concern. Because the whole battle against apartheid was against race classification, about people be promoted on basis of race, and we tried to work away from that. And unfortunately, at the moment, it is absolutely the same. It's just the reverse from the apartheid dispensation. Now we are marginalizing the white people, the Indian people, and in some cases, black people. Because I had many students over years, and many of them came to my office to complain. They are just telling me they may be black, but they cannot compete against the internal cronyism, the internal mafias that are within certain structures, especially during my time at the University of the Free State, when I had very close links to the Free State government and the related departments in that context. So yes, Shafat, it is a problem. Discrimination, unfortunately, is well and alive, and we still have a long way to go in order to reach the point of a non-racial, non-sexist, democratic South Africa.
Yes, Prof, and perhaps, many say that the whites and the Indians are just used as ratepayers, taxpayers, and that's all they're good for. They're being used and abused. How do you react to that, Prof?
Well, Shafat, the figures are telling us the story. And the figures are telling us that about 3 million taxpayers are paying 80 to 90% of the personal taxes in South Africa. While the opposite is true, that about 20 million people in South Africa are receiving social grants. I know that Davi Root is working with a figure of 30 million. If we include all the people that are getting salaries from the state, we are talking about 50% of the population. Now, that is not a sustainable scenario And I haven't seen a racial breakdown of that 3 million, but I can assure you it is not a it is not representative in a demographic sense of the word. And I have no doubt that you will most probably find a majority of the minorities amongst that 3 million people that are paying taxes. In that sense, it is absolutely true. And in a way, we have a problem in South Africa, and that is the expectation that the state should provide. And my take on the state is quite the opposite. You should provide and put the state in a position to manage your affairs, but the responsibility is starting with the individual, and it's starting off with responsible taxpayers. Unfortunately, this is not happening. And what we know, and I'm talking to tax people on a regular basis in terms of my involvement with the business school, and they are quite clear that the current situation cannot continue.
Thank you very much, Prof. You enjoy your lecture tour there in Mosselbaai. We'll talk to you soon, Prof. And have a beautiful day ahead, and enjoy your day, Prof.
Thank you very much.
Yes, it was good being in your pious and sagacious company this morning. I must thank Lucky for doing brilliant engineering. Jazakallah khaira, Lucky. And yes, keep it locked on to Markaz Sahaba for our beautiful programming and lovely nasheeds interspersed. And don't forget Mufti AK's special edition of a Q&A from 2 to 4 p.m. From the team and I, right, next up will be a rendition of the Noble Quran, Juz a Day. Pay close attention to that when the Quran is being rendered. From the team and I, till we meet you again, we bid you Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Markaz Sahaba Online Radio, empowering the Ummah.